that will be a way to hear better. Even though I may try to speak a bit, sometimes a bit more loud, but I know that very soon I forget, and then maybe some people far away are wondering what I am saying. So don't be afraid, and you may sit closer if you wish. I know there are not so many walls against which you can lean, close in the front, but you may choose either to be seated comfortably and being able to lean on the wall, or maybe to hear what I may say. Although the description of the practice of meditation is very simple, we try usually to give some Dharma talk, to say a few words that we may be inspired to practice the meditation. But what it comes down to can be said in only a few words. So there is many ways to speak about meditation. And usually a simple way to practice it. Coming to Tel Aviv yesterday, we flew from Geneva, and then we saw so many people coming into the country. There were a long queue of people, and many people coming in groups, and they had names written on them, the name of the tours they had joined, you know, Quest Tour, and many very sophisticated name for tours, which I think is quite maybe specific to tourists coming to Israel, since it is a holy land. You get a very specific type of tourist who just come to visit the holy places. So they don't come for ordinary trip, but they come as a pilgrim, for pilgrimage. Many come, of course, in Israel, and some other, according to their beliefs, may go to other country. You meet some in India. Many people travel all around India to see the holy places, the sacred places, like Varanasi and other places. According to others' beliefs, they may go to Lhasa in Tibet and also visiting the holy places. Very special type of traveling and a very old tradition. This way of seeing the land or a country or a city as being sacred and being very important is a very old tradition. From the earliest time, we may see that people organize their space around a sacred space. There would be first maybe a center, a temple, a mountain, and around that there will be the organization of the space, all the known space, and that will be the sacred space. And farther, the unknown land will be the profane world, a land or a space which is not so much well known, where people living there will be strange people, where all the kind of dark aspect of the vision of the world will be placed far away outside of this sacred place. Far away there will be the space or world of darkness, of chaos, not organization. Sacred place play a very important role in the sense that every temple, every holy mountain, holy trees is supposed to be at the center of the world. Oh, there's so many centers of the world according to the beliefs. Every chapel, every temple, every holy place, every holy tree in India, they are the center of the universe. And the vision of this sacred place is that it is a place where there is a most intense sense of being, where the light of being is the most intense. If you go far from that, then the intensity of being, of life, is decreasing, and then rather than light will come darkness. So a holy place, a place of pilgrimage, is a place where one would go actually to be really exactly at the center of the universe, where the sense of being is the most intense. So in space it plays a very important role. Even the Buddha, when he awakened in India, he was seated below a tree which is a holy tree now, with many, many small holy trees just looking alike the one under which the Buddha sat when he reached enlightenment. So many trees, and they are all centers, the center of the universe. Now when people go to place of pilgrimage, they come to a place where something very important has happened in the past, and often it is in the past, in a far away past, not something that we will necessarily remember 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but it's kind of a time which is outside of history, which is rather in the mythology, and which is a time that you may meet again every year, for example, when there is a celebration, when you have holidays and celebration of those specific days, then you come back to a specific day, but in a sense not a time which is placed in history, but getting back to something which is outside the time of history. The place of pilgrimage and time of pilgrimage is a way to come to a place of the most intense being, and also to transcend time, to go beyond time. If we see the world, which is not a sacred world, the profane world, on the contrary, it has a different structure. It is where duration belongs. All the work of causality, the work of practical matters, the work, for example, of sowing in the field for the sake of harvesting, that's all the profane world, where one will do useful things. But when one is doing something useful, there is some aspect of the action which is very important, because the action is never, in a sense, a free action is never completed. When you will work in the field for future harvesting, it means that this action has a sense, a meaning, only with respect to the future. In itself, is not completed. Something is lacking. What is lacking is a result of the action. That is, of course, good for working in the field, but any type of work where causality and duration is implied means that this action is subjected to the result. Does not exist within itself, in its fullness, and the profane world and the profane time of duration is never a full time, is always some situation which is not completed, which only take its meaning from something which may happen in the future or may not happen in the future. That the profane world, seeing the sense of the world, it means that which is in front of the temple, that which is in front of what is sacred. So the profane world is at some distance of that which is sacred. The profane is at some distance of that which exists outside of time. The profane is at some distance of that which is at the most intense sense of being. Another sacred time that may be experienced during those time of pilgrimage, of visiting holy places, where the time, the duration is abolished, just come back to a sense that this specific happening or events or pilgrimage is outside of the time, outside of the profane time. Outside of duration, many rites which are practiced in holy places are rites which do not produce anything. There are rites, it's not usually in a temple, in a church, then one would make the bread for the people to eat. The bread or whatever would be made in a temple, in a church, will be something which is outside of the useful world. Because the usefulness, again, the usefulness will bring a sense of incompleteness, because it has to wait for the result. That's why usually a rite or rituals or many aspects of organized religion is not done in a sense of being useful. Maybe to bring this abolition of time, where this time just the experiencing of what's happening is there, not subjected to any future result. In the Hindu tradition, we may see the temples, and the meaning of the temples is understood in many ways. The temple is the center of the universe, is a Mount Meru, the sacred mountain for the Indians, is also the god, whatever god the Hindu may be worshipping, Shiva, Vishnu or other. It's also the body of the adept. So we see that they are now slowly bringing all this sense of sacred place, center of the universe, slowly back to the people themselves. The signification, the meaning, will be, rather than being something outside, will come to the pilgrim himself or herself. In a world where most of the sense of the sacred has gone, which is mostly a profane world, a sense of orientation may be missing. We may see in the big cities where nowadays people have lost the sense of the sacred, that sense of some orientation in the life of the people living only in a profane world, suddenly is lacking, something is lacking. The life has no direction, no meaning, no sense. It may have been taken before to the structure of the religion with all the type of explanation, and that maybe the world will have a meaning and will have an orientation, and that every people, according to this belief, will find a proper place. While in a profane world, then people are only reduced to some useful tools, and they will be seen only through the efficiency of their work. In a world of the profane, the way of presenting oneself is to tell which type of tools we are. So I am a medical doctor. It's not my being, it's my function, or secretary, or maybe I'm working in computer. It's not what I am, it's my function. In a world where only the profane dimension is addressed, then people lack orientation, and then people lack the sense of fullness, of presence, of being, because everything is only subjected, bound to some kind of useful consequence or useful result. There is no being which takes its full meaning and deepest meaning just by the fact of being. It's only a way of existing within the scope of duration. And the scope of duration we'll be questioning very much during our retreat of meditation. Now that consideration, explanation of pilgrimage, holy places, is a way of speaking about religious matter in an external way, in the mystical tradition, or in the tradition of the yogi, or in the tradition of the meditation, the pilgrimage is an inner pilgrimage, and one also will be dealing with the place of the most intense place of being. One will also be dealing with an experience where duration is not anymore constructed, not anymore perpetuated, that one will come to a place where duration is abandoned and where the fullness of being will be met. Not going to an outer place, not needing to wait for some holy time, but rather by connecting oneself within our own experience, that the place where our pilgrimage is going to happen within ourselves, and the time, this holy time, will be every instant of our meditation, not a specific day of the week, not a specific date of the year, but every instant. In this experiencing the very moment, if we don't construct a sense of duration, then the sense of time and duration will be abolished. All our journey into meditation is a pilgrimage which is happening within ourselves, within each of our experiences, and at every instant. No need to go to a special place, and no need to wait for a special time. We may be misled if we start to look for a specific place within ourselves. Suddenly, if we may believe that maybe it is in the heart that the place of pilgrimage, the inner place of pilgrimage, will happen. Maybe it is in the heart, maybe it is in the head, or maybe it is in a specific place. That would be misleading if one were to consider that there will be, or there would be, a specific place within ourselves. It means that our attitude will be to stand in front of it. And we saw that the sense of profane means to stand in front of the temple. So if we stand in front of a specific place within ourselves, the heart or whatever, it means that we are staying outside and we are still in a profane space. The place of our most intense being is each experience. We may lose ourselves outside by being concerned only with perception, being concerned only with hearing sounds, voice, or seeing forms. If we are only concerned with what's happening outside of ourselves, then we can't connect with this most intense place of our being. We are just losing ourselves in the external world. The only way to connect to the most intense and full way of being is just to be the experience itself, the experience of hearing, of seeing, or of sensing tactile sensation. Just being with the experience itself, that the place at every instant where our pilgrimage is happening. Not through taking a distance from the experience itself. In Australia, there is a tribe, interesting tribe, because they are nomadic people, and they camp every now and then, they would change of place, and they have a huge pillar, which is like a totem, and they put it at the center of their camp every time they change of place. So they are always at the center of the universe. The center of the universe is changing with them. In our experiencing, It's the same. Every experience is the center of our universe, of our world, and is the most intense, most dense way of being for ourselves. And that is changing every instant. If we believe that we'll be in one place and that's done for all, then we'll very soon see that doesn't work this way. If we are doing the walking meditation, then at every step, at every moment of the step, we are holding our totem. We are just exactly at this time, at this place. And for us, that's our sacred place. Every instant and every place within a step itself. When we will be doing the walking meditation is not to go somewhere. Like if we were believing that I will go to a sacred place, then one may push that always in front of oneself and never being in the sacred place, believing that it's here, like many travelers or maybe many spiritual seekers, believing that they will go to this place, to this temple, and they don't find what they want, and then they go to another temple, another place, and they don't find, and they keep on moving. But actually the sacred place is within themselves. And if one is looking outside of oneself, one will not find it. That will happen in our meditation, in our walking, or in any movement that we will be doing during the day. It's exactly where we are that this holy place is happening. Every instant. We won't be walking to go anywhere, but just for the experience of being present at every instant. In many ways we are tempted in our meditation practice to bring a worldly or a profane attitude. And since to be skillful or efficient in the worldly life or in our daily life is to be very efficient and to be able to move things around for the effect that we want to accomplish. So we are changing, always changing something, and then we come closer to the result that we want. And we have developed a fantastic skill to move things around, to transform them, to reach the result, and the most sophisticated result that we are looking for. Yet in doing that, every instant we lose the density or the fullness of our being, because we are only concerned by a future result. We are, when we are concerned with a future result, with the consequences or the fruit of our actions, we are just subjected to the result, and this action is not fully itself and is not free. If we bring this attitude in our meditation, then we try to be skillful and very efficient, and then we start to transform every instant. We want to be helpful for our meditation, so we try to improve it. So we change a little bit, we change something. And if we bring that, this attempt to change every instant is just what will prevent us of being every instant exactly in the experience which is happening. So any attempt to transform, to improve what's happening for ourselves is a way of being not at the most intense place of our being. It's a way of not existing completely and not fully. So we may see two aspects very important in our meditation. One is not to bring in duration, which the sense of improvement, transformation necessarily bring into. No sense of duration, no sense of improvement, no sense in keeping anything. When we bring that, we are bringing some kind of confusion in our practice, not keeping the sense of time. the most important way for us to be connected or to be just in the experiencing of every instant will be to be connected with the bodily sensation, because they are happening exactly where we are. While if we were to be concerned with sounds or sights, then that will take us outside of ourselves. We may be fascinated by sight and sound, and that will not help ourselves to be connected. But the bodily sensation have the characteristic not to be experienced at some distance. It's very difficult for me to experience my hand and 1 meter in front of myself. Of course, that's completely impossible. I can only experience my bodily sensation exactly where I am. That's why in the meditation it is so useful as a grounding field of experience to use the bodily sensation. Just experiencing the different aspects of our sensation, bodily sensation, will start to connect with ourselves and slowly to be able to fully experience every instant. Not that we will exclude all other fields of experience, but that will be the most grounding field of our experiencing, to come to our sense of being seated, the weight of our body, the different feeling that we may experience or sensation while we are seated or while we are walking, as a way to come to our center, if you wish, to connect with this fullness of being, not lost in the surrounding. We'll speak about this aspect of the practice in a more technical way, but I want to mention here the attitude that will be developed in our meditation practice while walking or sitting, just to be with the bodily sensation as a way to experience the fullness of our being at every instant. So during the retreat we will alternate meditation in sitting position and meditation in walking. But it doesn't mean that there are different meditation. We are just at every instant connected or trying to connect with the fullness of our being. Being seated or walking or even eating is the same attitude which is there to be cultivated in our meditation. Nothing is changing from one instant to another instant in the sense of attitude that should be connected or should be developed. But for that to happen for us in an harmonious way, and that we may spend those few days together in the best way possible for each one of us, there will be some kind of setup that will be helpful and most conducive to our practice of meditation. And I think Patricia will say a few words about this sense of meditation and the way that we live together for those few days in a conductive sense for meditation.
Welcome everybody. If you need to stretch your legs, I do. Just take a few minutes to do so. I'm looking forward to this week that we're going to spend together, and the same for me. If you don't hear my voice, I'll be simpler than Charles. Just raise your hands and I'll speak a little louder. I think it's always very inspiring to think back 2,500 years ago of the Buddha going through this exact same process that we are engaging in today, and feel the sense of the tradition living right through to this very moment. And I think there's a reason that we are all here in this room tonight. We probably feel some kind of unsatisfactoriness at one level or another, and we are willing to feel this unsatisfactoriness and have the intention to question our being here. Or maybe it's just a simple interest in what exactly is life that brings us here. To sit here in silence during a whole week, to simplify our lives. And we are set up here as a group. We're not alone to do this. And it's a very great transmission through the generations that helps us undertake this journey. And you'll see through the day that it's going to be providing a great support in the moments of difficulty. Because we're each going to have moments of difficulty. And in many places in the world, in whatever form people are gathering, to seek the truth of life, just this very moment. And in these moments that we have difficulty, I think it's very inspiring to think just now, a place where I used to sit for quite a few times in my meditation practices in IMS in America, near Boston. There's a place where 120 yogis are sitting now for 3 months. They started end of September and are sitting right through until end of December. Just in the same way we're going to do this week here. Traditionally, we start a retreat by taking refuge in the three jewels. The three jewels are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And I shall go briefly through them. And if you wish, you can use them as a support for your practice. This is really optional. The refuge in the Buddha is referring to the seed of enlightenment that lies in each one of us, the possibility to awaken. And it can also be of a very great proof of embodying the qualities of the Buddha, such as fearlessness, wisdom, compassion. All these qualities that are within us and that we can develop if we are willing to look inside. The refuge in the Dharma is meaning to take refuge in the truth of the law as the things as they are. Things as they really are, not as we believe them to be. And the refuge in the Sangha means to rely upon the community for awakening, to use the support of each one of us here when it is difficult. Silence is a prerequisite, and the simplicity of the setup is based upon awakening ideal conditions. So we really simplify our lives here to give us the ability of exploring tranquility. And you'll see that it's not so different from our daily lives. We have come here with our minds and our well-known habits. But what is different is that we need these conditions to see through our difficulties, to see clearly what exactly is happening within ourselves. And therefore silence is needed as an ally and is used to really simplify the being in a way that it enables us to be with ourselves without having to be hastened by distractions outwardly. And we shall also feel in this way what is true to our heart. Using our heart fully for an authentic living. Knowing clearly why we make certain choices in our lives. Why we take certain directions. We have certainly come here with a certain weight of the past, of a long history, or maybe only yesterday's events or 2 weeks ago's events that come along already, cutting the possibility of a being totally fresh, totally new being sitting here, without ideas, without knowledge, without past events. And so this week we're going to try to begin being afresh, leaving all things behind, and ready for a new adventure. We're born in this moment and make a new arrival in the world with each breath. And so, in this very moment, be careful with your expectations. And if you have done retreats before, observe this comparing mind between what will be this retreat like compared to the last one I did. Just acknowledge, just see if there's this type of mind state going on already, just as you're sitting here since maybe 45 minutes. Or if we knew, we may be asking ourselves what will happen during this week. There may be fear. Do we know what will happen? And if we had some projects for this week, would they be unfolding the way you think of them right now in this moment? I don't think so. So do we need to be reassured? And if so, maybe you can watch the mind that tends to lead to knowledge, to holding on, and give space to be willing to discover. Much of the work here, moment after moment, is being just here and fully alive in this very moment. And it's very simple. It's hard to do, but it's very simple. The practice, you'll see, is not complicated. So we set up an environment which is helpful for us to do that and allows ourselves to experiment whatever is arising in the moment. To touch the fullness, the richness of having nothing to do and exploring what that means, having nothing to do. Our lives are so busy, and it may be scary to think, I'm not going to do anything during the whole week except walk and sit and eat. Hopefully that's going to be probably a nice moment. But it's also okay to be scary, to be afraid. So can I feel my being alive without it achieving anything? No achievement, like Charles just said, without accomplishment, without even engaging in an inner dialogue about everything that is happening within yourself. That inner mind, you'll hear it, that inner voice. Or maybe looking outwardly for an eyesight. Somebody looking at us for self-comforting. Needing attraction. So we can rest during a week from anything that is outerly produced. And we don't need to be anybody special. We can really give ourselves this gift to live this moment wholeheartedly, just for the sake of living and awake. Or on the contrary, explore and allow our inner life of projections and images, if they are. Just being aware of one or the other. You can maybe just take a few moments to reflect, when was the very first moment you chose to attend this retreat? Was it a long time ago that you wanted to be here tonight? Or did you decide yesterday? Out of which space did your motivation come to be here tonight? And now, what is the feeling that is arising now that you hear me saying this? Maybe you need to clarify to know why you're sitting in this hall. Maybe you take the rest of the night to know tomorrow morning why you come. And we'll see for each one of us that there will be moments of ease, of calm, and even joy, and moments of very, very physical aches, restlessness, discouragement, burden, and all are part of the scenery. Just like the sky has some days when it's completely blue and some other days it's rainy and gray, and it's awful. But do we ask the sky to be any different? So in the same way, it's part of the process of opening, of letting ourselves open, just like a flower can open. And as we open, the hurts, the wounds do come. But it's being right at the center of who we are, and we explore and know. And the best ally here is patience. So please really think back. There's only one word, being patient when it's really difficult, and non-judgmental, whatever arises. It's just an experiment. And you can let it all be there. And out of a plate of interest, to take part in the game, it being pleasant or not pleasant. Accepting each experience to live a deeper sense of connection within. To do this, the qualities that are needed are gentleness, kindness, simplicity, an investigation with a true heart. I just want to say that besides Vipassana, in the afternoon sitting, we still decide which one, there will be a practice of loving-kindness meditation, which is metta. Maybe some of you know already what it is. And this practice is exactly for the opening of the heart. I'll talk more about it tomorrow. And to be able to be in a safe environment, harmonious, the tradition speaks of 5 ethical guidelines, or precepts to be followed. They help the mind and body act intentionally without the prospect of harming oneself and others. And they help us be at peace within. So this is a commitment that should be kept until the very end of the retreat. And maybe you can even repeat once daily every one of these 5 ethical guidelines to integrate them in the mind, because it's easy to forget them. These are very powerful, and they're very indispensable to a spiritual life of conscious living. Because we have intention, we have a choice to deliberately refrain from harming. And they form the foundation here for our daily practice, for harmony and peace. So it creates a deep sense of safety to leave these ethical guidelines within a group like this one. Especially, we rely totally upon them because they allow to open ourselves. And they allow also that we can open to our joys and sorrows. Just because we feel safe and supported by one another in this environment. It's a very great protection. So I shall give you now, announce these 5 guidelines, and I would like you to take them fully at heart. The first one is not killing, or not taking the life away of any being or living creature, not even an ant, or swapping a mosquito, without exception. And this is intentionally. If you're doing your walking meditation, just be careful. If there's some kind of animal around, you just need to be careful not to harm it. So it's quite evident that this one is to be kept quite easily. The second one is not stealing, which in this context means not taking anything that is not given to you. For example, not using a second blanket or anyone else's cushion if you see that they are not available or if they belong to one other person. The third one is not engaging in sexual activity during this retreat and in any kind of way engaging in seduction or play, which could lead to confusion. And exploring this field if there's a strong driving force in the mind towards it. Looking at the projections, images, field of sense desire. So it means here staying celibate. The fourth in our normal daily life is not lying or use harsh speech. And here it extends to remaining completely silent. Throughout the whole retreat. And this is really for the benefit of inner explanation. Like I have said before, to understand ourselves and to open up in a way that we can explore ourselves, we need to be undistracted. And therefore, silence is really indispensable. So as from this moment, when you walk out, silence should be kept. The fifth concerns not taking any drugs or intoxicants, which means here not taking any alcohol or any drugs that you don't usually use. Of course, if you have your own medicine, you take those. And these are the five guidelines. In Burma, when I practiced just a few months ago, we would take these five ethical guidelines every time before each sitting in Pali, just to show you the importance of the morality part, just to show you the importance of how we need to repeat them to ourselves to integrate them, because it's not given that we use these guidelines in our normal life. We're too busy rushing around, and it really takes some awareness to use them. So we'll engage ourselves into the practice altogether, taking these guidelines until the end of the retreat. And we dedicate the spirit to really trust ourselves and others in this adventure to the purpose of meditation and inner exploration. This process is inner transformation of our consciousness, of our being, through the deepening of wisdom and opening the heart. It's not at all magical. We're just using mindfulness or awareness to live each experience in depth and to be fully present in each moment. Understanding what it means to be really present, to be alive, to be awake. And maybe the only magic that there is to this is that seemingly sitting here alone, just for yourself, well, in fact, we're not doing it only for ourselves. Because of the interconnectedness of every particle, of every atom of life, we're contributing to the peace in the world. 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 We're contributing to the peace in the world.